Welcome to the Round 8, your Supercoach Coach live question and answer session. I'm joined this week by Mark, or FB Donkey.
G'day, everyone.
We'll start off, as we do every week, by letting you guys know how we went on the weekend.
You're pretty happy about it this week, Marcus.
I am. I scored 25-21, which gave me a round ranking of 1,500, and I'm back in the top 2,000 now, so that's all right. I had four midfielders score above 140. Swallow finally delivered, and his average is looking passable now at 111. Still like a few more big scores to boost that score up. And it's good to have Nick Nat back scoring for me. I would have liked a bigger score against a non-existent ruck division, but only managed 108. I'm hoping that Tomahawk really lifts over the next 3 weeks. We've got Bulldogs, GWS and Carlton coming up, so...
Did you do any trades last?
Yeah, I did. I brought in Birchall and Patterson. So, because Nick Nat came back, I had two extra premiums playing as compared to the week before. So, yeah, looking okay. Mark, how'd you go?
I didn't do too badly. Things were looking very bright until Sunday afternoon when Murphy went down in that hit with Dangerfield. I scored 24-36, which was okay. It sort of took me up the rankings a few spots up to 2,344th. Still like to get back in that top 1,000, so going to have to keep working hard. I think Murphy has cost me the ability to upgrade my fifth midfielder this week. He lost 140,000 after I brought him in, three crappy scores. I think that's probably cost me any shot at the 50K, but I can still try and fight back and have a decent ranking for the year. But yes, I was rather sad on Sunday afternoon.
So just to reiterate, I have overtaken you back on top. Bragging rights, booyah.
Well, seriously, though, like, what are the chances of Murphy getting 89 against GWS and then a 70-odd and then getting a 30-odd and getting injured? He'd missed one game in, like, 5 years. And that's very disappointing.
Big topic of discussion this week. I was hoping to actually bring Murphy in. Had him penned to come in a couple rounds' time. But so I guess we'll be looking at round 13 replacements specifically, I guess, considering a lot of people have their team sort of set up for the buys already. But we'll look at replacements as a whole and compare, you know, bringing in a player that suits your buy strategy as compared to just going for the best available option. So that's a pretty big topic this week. Shall we start off with Dane Zorko, though? Obviously started with the first sub-affected score of 16 and then last week pumped out a big 100 score, but a lot of Brisbane did score pretty well. How do you see Zorko as a pick? There was a big preseason hype. Should everybody be bringing him in? And what does his round 11 buy mean to people, considering a lot of people already loaded up on GWS rookies?
Sure. Well, I don't expect him to score 100 every week. We'll start there because he's not going to play GWS every week. But he did look really, really good. He's a bigger body, mature age. I guess there might be some injury concerns considering he did miss the first few games of the year, but he was able to win contested ball. He was good around the stoppages. He'd probably play a little bit sort of more forward than midfield, which means it might affect his scoring. So he's not going to be a huge scorer, but we really want to be bringing in these high job security rookies if we can at this stage of the year so that they can fill in when we need them over the back half of the season. So I do think that Zorko is a must-have. His DPP makes it even better. Personally, in my team, I actually don't have a DPP connection to the midfield. So this week I will be bringing him into my midfield for Toby Green, who got suspended and sort of, he only scored 52 because he had like three frees against and seven clangers or something. But yeah, so he's maxed out and... I think that Zorko, you should probably be going out of your way to bring Zorko in this week, especially seeing as Couch wasn't even named for the Demons.
I would delay upgrades if it means that you can bring him in. I think it's really encouraging that, I think I read somewhere that he played two games in the lower division. I think that's the NEAFL before he got called up. So he's obviously rated quite highly and shown enough to push himself into the 22 in a really short period of time off a limited preseason. So
the NFL is a bit of a strange league, though. I think Brisbane reserves beat GWS reserves by about 250 points on the weekend. Tom Mitchell, playing for Sydney, scored 174 Supercoach in just his third game back in the reserves. Yeah, you get some pretty strange results coming out of that league.
It's not a very strong league to play against. So you do tend to see the AFL listed players dominate. Let's head to the Murphy question, I guess, and looking specifically at replacements. So what I want to start off asking is, where do you sort of stand on the issue of, and as I mentioned in the intro, that most people have their buy structures already sort of set up. So if you're trading Murphy out as a round 13 buy player, most people would be looking to bring a like for like and bring a round 13 buy player in for Murphy. But the options that we're going to look at, and I think the best four are Judd, Mitchell, Del Santo, and Cochin, probably don't look anywhere near as attractive as compared to Scott Thompson or Stanton, which a lot of people are looking at. So
there's also a big price difference there. It does depend a little bit how you've got your midfield structured and where you want to cop the donuts. Because if you've already got, say, Ablett and Del Santo in your midfield, then trading Murphy, you can maybe look at around 11 or 12 player.
But what I want to ask is, if bringing in Stanton or Thompson will guarantee you a donut, like they're your third keeper in that particular buy round,
sure,
are they still worthwhile bringing in over a Del Santo, a Judd, a Mitchell, or Cochin, who have a lot more question marks over their scoring?
Yeah, that's a tough question, I guess. I guess it'd be pretty line ball, and so it's really difficult to make a decision because you've got like about, 13 games or so left in the year. So if they're going to average 10 more points a game, then it's about 130, which is sort of getting really close to the averages. So it could be a line ball decision. It probably makes it not so bad to actually go for it and not so bad to cop the donut if that's what's going to happen.
Personally, if it's a line ball decision, I tend to gravitate towards the safer decision. So that would probably mean that I'm probably advocating that if it means copying an extra donut, that you just swap a like for like and keep around bring in a round 13 player to replace Murphy. So I think that's a really big topic of discussion this week, and it's what we're going to be spending most of our time on. So Judd, Mitchell, Del Santo, and Cochin are probably the best four options, like I mentioned before.
From round 13, for sure.
Yeah, from round 13. I want to start off with Judd, and to me, even though I probably am most confident about his being able to score the highest average out of the four of them, that we've already heard that Judd's likely to get rested one more time before the end of the season, and that's sort of enough to keep me off him, combined with the fact that Judd, unfortunately, isn't in career best form at the moment. He tends to go missing during some games. Opposition have been really good at cutting them off at stoppages recently, which Judd is really obviously strong in, and I think that's sort of limited his output a little bit. As well as that, the number one tag has been going to Murphy a bit, and they'll return back to Judd. So there are enough question marks for me about Judd to sort of rule him out of the four. That was the first of my thought processes when deciding between the four. How do you feel about that assessment of him?
Sure. I think that there's a lot of truth in what you're saying there. They do have Brisbane round 20 and Gold Coast round 22, which would be perfect times to be resting Judd leading into the finals. But then again, I think that there's question marks over all of those guys, particularly Del Santo and Mitchell. I think Judd could easily average 6 or 7 more points than them. So out of the four, Judd would be pretty close to number one choice for me. He's going to cop more attention now that Murphy's out, and we don't know what's going to happen there because Murphy has only missed one game in like 5 years, so we can't sort of go back and check what's likely to happen there. But I think Judd, he's been playing all right lately. He's scored 144 and 112 in the last two games at the Docklands where he normally struggles. They don't have quite as many games at the Docklands in the near future. They have Melbourne this week, Port Adelaide the week after, which could be a couple of really good games for him. Then they do have the Cats, Eagles, Hawthorn, Collingwood, so four That's tough games bad. In a row. That's pretty bad, but then it opens up again in the later part of the year. So, I think Judd's a pretty good pick. He's the sort of player that could go on a really big run. So I'd be tempted to back him in with Murphy out. And sure, he's going to get some attention, but he's also a really, really good player, and he should be able to show that he can handle that, and he's capable of those really, really big scores as well.
Cochin, Del Santo, Mitchell, then, if you have Judd close to one, who would be the next that you'd put in his sort of category? I'm assuming Cochin seeing as you said there are some doubts over Mitchell and Del Santo?
Sure, I just think that Richmond's draw in the second half of the year probably opens me up to Cochin a little bit. They do have the tough game of Hawthorn this week, which is why I'd sort of lean towards bringing Judd in this week rather than Cochin, just because of who they're playing in the very, very short term. But I think Cochin's averaged about 109 over the first half of the year, where they've had a really, really tough draw. Considering they have an easy draw in the second half of the year, I don't think it's beyond reason that he could average 120 on the run home. So with Delidio absolutely smashing it, I think that takes a little bit of attention away from Cochin. They seem to be able to break the tag a little bit with Cochin now. He's being able to break the tag while he's on the ball, but he's also sort of switching up forward and kicking goals. And I think he kicked three against the Bombers on the weekend. So, yeah, Cochin seemed to be the safest out of those picks to me. Probably doesn't have as much upside as Del Santo does. But, yeah, Cochin's one of my favourite players in the AFL. So that's another reason why I really, really like him. He's very exciting to watch.
Big concern with Cochin for me, for mine, is that he just, like you said, doesn't have that scoring potential. He's only scored above 130 twice in his career. Hasn't done so yet this year.
So far.
Yep, so far. If you assume that, yes, he's going to stay consistent and, you know, push out those 120s, but he's going to have, you know, the off game here and there and push out a 73 like he did, that's enough to push his average down. I mean, in the eight games he's played, he's only had one score above 70. Extrapolating forward, do I think that he's only going to continue to have only one in eight poor games? I'm not as certain. I also want to ask you, as a fan of Cochin, does he tend to play poorer, like not score as well against poor teams? Because he only scored 73 against Port Adelaide this year. And taking a look at his stats last year, against Gold Coast, he only scored 88. Against Melbourne, he scored 76 and 94. And against Port Adelaide, he only scored 66. Last year's poor finishes. So that's a bit of a concern. Even though his draw is opening up, he doesn't seem to necessarily translate that into monster scores.
Sure, I think it's probably a little bit too small of a sample size, but there might be something in it that he does thrive on the games where there's a lot of contested ball, because that's what he's really, really good at.
Yeah.
But like against Adelaide, he scored 132 last year. Against Brisbane, 137. So yeah.
I guess my concern
is his two highest scores last year were against those poorer sides. So.
Yeah, I guess a big concern is just that, yeah, he doesn't have that outside game to complement his inside game at the moment, and we might see him fall over in scoring if he drops off. He doesn't have that, you know, cheap ball to help him, you know, get those scores back up. Which brings me to, you know, the direct contrast of that, who's Nick Del Santo, who we know puts out the occasional poor game, but just really can turn it on. I think the first half of last year, he only averaged close to 100, and in the back end, he averaged close to 135 or something. So Del Santo can really turn it on, and against poor teams, he tends to do that. So I just want to get your thoughts on Del Santo versus Cochin, which I think a lot of people will be deciding between this week.
Sure.
With Del Santo's history as a pretty much a 110 certified scorer, do you see that as his minimum this year, or do you think that he might not be able to achieve that same height?
What's his minimum? 110?
Yeah, well,
I wouldn't think so at all. Like, okay. He has had a down season before where he averaged 100. Like, I don't think he has 110 minimum. He's averaged 103 so far. We've seen a few changes at the Saints this year. They've got Lenny Hayes back. They're not quite the team they were a couple of years ago. They've got a new coach. I'm not sure that Del Santo is breaking the tag as easy under the new coach. He's sort of been given different roles. I know on the weekend he was told just to be a tackle machine, and that's sort of how he got his numbers up in the end. So I'm not completely sold that he's going to have that 110 minimum average from here.
He has averaged 112 plus in six of the last seven seasons.
For sure. Mm. Absolutely, he has. But that doesn't mean that he's not capable of a lower average as well, because he has been around for a while. St Kilda have also had their easiest part of the draw for the year. And Del Santo really does seem to like bash up on the worst teams a lot, and that's where he gets his scores, because last year I think he had a couple of 170s against the teams like the Suns. So he's really going to rely on getting those scores in order to boost his average. So Yeah, I don't think he's the most consistent. I think he's probably got a bigger upside than Cochin does at this stage in their career. He's also $50,000 cheaper, so I completely understand why people would be picking him. I think he's probably at $480,000, you can't really go wrong. But personally, I'd be taking Cochin.
Okay, so I want to ask you, what do you see as Cochin's, you know, minimum, and what do you see as his maximum?
Obviously, that sort of stuff's pretty hard to predict. He could average as low as 100 and go up to 125. Who knows? Like, okay. I think someone so young in their career, I think it's really, really, it's a fairly wide range there.
Yeah, but as compared to Del Santo, where would you have him?
I think his ceiling's probably up to about the 140, but has a basement of about 100, 105, so a similar basement but a higher ceiling. But I just think that Cochin's more likely to reach the higher range than Del Santo is, personally.
I personally think that, and I still haven't made my mind up between the two, and I'll be bringing one of them in this week. Obviously, as I mentioned, I'm not that keen on Judd. But I just think that because Del Santo is able to average 135, that sort of lifts him up a lot in my eyes as a fantasy selection, because if I get Cochin, I'm almost certain that he won't breach 118 average. I think 118 would be a really good result from him. I don't see him breaking really past that, and that's not going to win you the competition, bringing in a 118 player at his price. But with Del Santo, he's 480,000 and could, you know, from here on out, you know, average, last year he did 135. You know, that would be incredible, but that's what he's sort of capable of. But even 125 would be awesome at his price. So I guess I just think it's also a bit more of an aggressive strategy, because I think Cochin, because of the lower upside, you're obviously picking him for his consistency. So it's a safer selection in that regard.
Sure. I kind of, to some extent, maybe my judgment is based on the fact that I don't really think I can win the 50K from here, and I'd much rather be barracking for Cochin than I would Del Santo.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so moving on to the last midfielder of the equation is Sammy Mitchell. Where do we see him in regards to Judd, Del Santo, and Cochin?
Sure, I think I'd have him last out of the three or of the four. He's priced at about the same as Cochin at 521 with a break even of about 100. He hasn't played 22 for a couple of years, and I think he's been laid out a few times, so he's also getting on a little bit in age, so into his 30s. I think I'd rather go for the more durable options of Del Santo and Cochin before Mitchell. Also, Mitchell's had one season where he's averaged 113 and has never averaged more than that in a season, so I would expect Del Santo and Cochin both could easily average more than that, and Del Santo's done it on like 7 or 8 occasions, so that's enough for me. Although, I mean, the Hawks do have an easier draw coming up. There's no Luke Hodge. Mitchell's probably got a bit more support around him in the midfield nowadays than he did before. So I can also understand definitely why people would pick Mitchell. He's just fourth on the list for me.
Yeah, I'd probably have that similar assessment. I'll probably bring in Del Santo at this stage.
Well, it sounded like you tried to convince me of Del Santo versus Cochin, so I can understand that, but it didn't really work. One of the questions in chat earlier on was looking at other options, and he had the question of Stanton versus Pendlebury. I think that it'd probably be useful to chuck Thompson into that discussion as well.
I think looking at the rest of Adelaide's draw, that Scott Thompson has got to be, assuming you have Ablett, has got to be the top option to bring in, because he's managed a really strong average in the face of pretty tough opposition so far. I think a lot of people were expecting during the Sydney, Geelong, Carlton, Collingwood period that we'd really be able to capitalise on the scoring and therefore price drop. But in the last 4 weeks, he scored 141, 119, 161 and 139 against solid opposition. So,
and normally he just beats up on the weaker teams.
And he absolutely still does. Against Gold Coast in round one, he scored 147. So, and looking at the rest of their draw, they have Gold Coast, Melbourne, Brisbane, Port GWS, Adelaide, and Port Adelaide still left in the draw. So that's a pretty nice thing pretty nice teams to look forward to,
and a whole bunch of games at Amy as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's really tough between the Pendlebury and Cochin. When I was saying, you know, assuming Stanton, you have... Oh, yeah, and Stanton. But I just think that that draw and Thompson's consistency so far this year, together with Adelaide's emergence, they're just working brilliantly around the stoppages, and he's getting more uncontested ball than he was previously. I really like the selection, and, you know, full credit to anyone that picked him, because I had my serious doubts on him at the start of the season. And to be honest, if you told me he'd be averaging 128, I would have told you to shut up. But he's absolutely killing it this season.
Sure, and I think that he can probably keep up a 128 average, because he sort of doesn't get tagged that much. And I think after what happened on the weekend, most of the tag probably will go to Dangerfield from now on.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to allow Thompson even more room to just keep churning out these good, consistent scores.
And I think in AFL Insider this week, they showed how Adelaide have been really working at the stoppages to get Scotty Thompson free. Bernie Vince and Dangerfield have been really good at that. They push their players into the contest and again into his tagger to get Thompson free. And he's been doing brilliantly thus far.
Sure, out of the three, I'd take Pendlebury down. I'd take Pendlebury without even thinking about it. I just think that although Thompson could easily average 125 from here, I think Pendlebury, it's almost a lock that Pendlebury will. Seems in absolutely brilliant form, kicked four goals on the weekend, won them the game, could have easily scored way more than that, and just has the history and the consistency and the pedigree and everything that I just think Pendlebury's more likely to get closer to Ablett than anyone else. So I'd definitely be taking Pendlebury first out of those three. And obviously a lot of this depends on your buy selection, because Thompson is from the round 11, whereas Pendlebury and Stanton are from the round 12 buy. So what do you think about Stanton? Obviously, like, it's kind of hard as a Bombers supporter. I didn't expect us to go this well, and I didn't expect Stanton to really jump up to that next level. But he certainly has, and he's just been absolutely crushing teams.
Yeah, it's a bit tough. I don't expect that he'll average 137 for the season.
But he doesn't have to. Like, he'd only have to average, like, 125 from here to still be a good pick.
Yeah. But all I'm saying is, are his bigger scores just coming now? I mean, it's a bit silly to say that, oh, just because, you know, he's averaging 137 now and I don't think that he can keep that up, which means that poor scores are going to have to come to drag his average down. But, I mean, if you look at Dane Swan, who was an absolute monster of the competition, I think his highest average was 126. So if Stanton keeps up a 125 average from now, he's going to beat Dane Swan's best ever Supercoach return. And I really find myself struggling to believe that will be possible. He scored above... Look at his scores, 180, 134, 161, 154, 164, 142.
Yeah.
He's had five scores above 142 in the last eight rounds. I don't think that's sustainable, and I think he will have a few poor games. He has had a 71, and his average might get pulled down. I still think he's a really good selection, don't get me wrong. But yeah, when I think, hey, Dane Swan, who's an absolute jet and has been a jet for years, has only averaged a career best of 127, and Stanton's currently at 137. I think he's just...
Yeah, I think you've got to give him a few extra points just because of the sub. Like, I think there's actually a couple of extra points in averages that... Averages should be a couple of points higher now. So that 130... Like, if you look back on Swan's 127, it might have actually been a 130, 131 average if you didn't have the sub.
Yeah. I mean, I still don't mind him as a pick, and I still think he's a good selection. But in comparison to Thompson and Pendlebury, I think they're safer selections.
Sure. The thing that stands out to me with Danton, and at least this is what I'm hoping for, is Swan and Montagna. They both sort of averaged like that about 100 for a few years, and then once their team got good, their average jumped like 30 points in a season, and went right up to the 125, 130 mark. And I'm really hoping that that's what Stanton's doing this year.
Well, I mean, that's just 137. I mean, even that's like Ablett type numbers. Maybe I'm just stunned and in disbelief and not getting with the and times.
Look, and that might be right, because like four rounds ago, you would have been going like, no way, 130, there's no way you can keep that up. But he has.
He has, yes.
Like at some point, maybe we do have to give in and say, hey, maybe this guy's for real.
And I mean, it's a good time to bring him in. He's got GWS this week. He's got Melbourne
week
after.
Melbourne next week, yeah.
Yeah, but from there, your draw does tighten up a bit. You don't really have any easy beats after that, except maybe Port. Goes Sydney, Frio, Western Bulldogs, St Kilda, Port, Geelong, Hawthorn, Adelaide, North Melbourne, Carlton, Richmond, and Collingwood. But he has scored well against good opposition, so...
All of them sound like easy beats to me, mate.
When you're sitting in 7-1, I guess your supporters can make those claims. All right, on to another question, which I think is a really pertinent one and something we really haven't looked at too much because we haven't really had to think about this question personally, both of us having both Dangerfield and side bottom. But if you had to pick one, who would you pick, Mark?
What are they averaging, 112 and 113? I'd probably take side bottom. I guess you want a reason for that. he's 16,000 more. He was my number one pick at the start of the year, so I've been on him all preseason. And I just think Danger's probably going to get a little bit more attention after this round, whereas side bottom, even with Swanee out, isn't like going to get the number one tag or anything like that. So
hasn't Dangerfield been getting attention for a few weeks now? Ever since his 141 game.
Sure, I think he's been getting some attention, but like they haven't had someone sitting on him, as far as I've been aware, like they would with the number one midfielder. So at some stage, someone's going to go and try and lock him down, I think, but just because he's going to win you a game. I think side bottom probably doesn't, like, he's just probably not going to win as many games for Collingwood off his own boot like Dangerfield will.
Yeah.
That Swans game, like Dangerfield actually just won that game himself, contested marking and just clearances and stuff in the last quarter. He was amazing.
Mm. I'd just go side bottom as well, based on the fact that I think side bottom is a better player at this stage of their career.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I know Dangerfield has game-winning abilities and he has really seriously impressive traits, but if you ask me whether I could pick between Steel side bottom or Patrick Dangerfield for my team this week, if I was an AFL coach, I'd pick Steel side bottom.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think it's a bit like Hurd versus Buckley. Like, Hurd would win you more games, but wouldn't get as much ball, and I would have taken Hurd every day of the week.
Pretty much it comes down to your buy situation. Dangerfield's a round 11 buy player, and there are really not that many good players from the round 11 teams. And I think, especially in the forward line, that there aren't very many. Dangerfield's one of the best. So I think, really, Dangerfield looks a lot better considering side bottom compared to the other round 12 options isn't that much more attractive, but Dangerfield compared to the other round 11 options is like heaps more attractive. So if you're looking to bring somebody in for a round 11 forward, I think Dangerfield's your man by a country mile, and you probably couldn't say that for side bottom in round 12. So we've got a Ryan O'Keefe question again, and I've sort of fielded this a few weeks now. I don't think that he's going to be a great selection based on the fact that he's had a limited preseason. So I'm going to keep saying that until the cows come home, and I'm not going to pick him based on that, based on what I've seen from him a couple of years ago. But if for another perspective, can we get Mark? What's your opinion on him?
My mate Nate, who I played in league this week, brought Ryan O'Keefe into his team, and it was quite painful for me having to watch that because I think he scored 140, but it was against the Demons. I think he has a three-round average of about 100, but that includes the 140. So low break-even, priced at 460. I think there's a bit of romanticism with O'Keefe that people sort of think, I remember in 2009 when mid-year he was sort of struggling and then just went boom for the rest of the year and basically just changed Supercoach that year. People are expecting that to happen again. I'm sort of not convinced about that, but I probably don't think he's as bad a pick as you do, Marcus. He has some decent scores behind him.
I think his price makes him an exceptionally poor pick because his big scores are coming now. Based on his current average, and I understand it's only 82, but he's about 55K overpriced. If you're hoping that he's going to average 90, then he's just about well priced, and I think
if you brought him in, you'd be hoping he'd averaged 105 from you.
Oh, well, I mean, come on, how realistic is that?
Is it really that unrealistic?
Like, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. What's his average been in the past? I'll bring up his
scores now. 81 this year, 102 last year, 90 the year before, 108 the year before that, 103 the year before that. He's had another 107 average. I don't think 105 is completely out of possibility for O'Keefe. Maybe he's got more competition for points at the Swans now, but like if he was fully fit and firing, I don't think 105 is out of range at all.
Yeah, but he's not. And the last time he wasn't, he produced a 90 season.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit tricky this week because he looks like a really good pick because he played Melbourne on the weekend and destroyed them. So, but then a lot of people have been destroying Melbourne this year. So I don't think he's a terrible pick.
Okay. All right. What other questions do we have, Mark?
I've only got one round 11 defender. At some stage, I want to get a second round 11 premium defender into my team. Who would you rate better out of Waters, Lake, Hargrave, Thompson or Hearn?
That's a really good question, Mark. And I think a lot of people will sort of be grappling with what round 11 options that they could bring in into their back lines. And personally, I'm leaning towards Hearn of the options available. I already have Lake. I understand that Waters is in really good form, but I really struggle to pick him based on his injury history.
He will break.
Well, I mean, even let's not say he will break for now, but what do you see, like Waters, he's currently averaging 99, and I mean, he's clearly in career best form. Let's assume he keeps this average. Hearn's currently averaging 94, and I think 95 is a pretty reasonable expectation for Hearn, and I know that he has been inconsistent in the past, so, you know, even 90 to 95... But I'd say if you're going to do that, then Waters is 95 to 100. I think realistically the difference is 5 points between the two. And then you take into the consideration the injury history, and I just don't think 5 points around is worth that risk.
Sure. Hearn doesn't have the greatest injury history. It's just that Bo Waters is much, much worse.
Yeah. That's a good point to note. Hearn does miss games.
The tricky thing with Waters' average is that the game against Richmond where he scored 100, he scored 25 points for that specky that he took right at the end of the game. So his score was really inflated there. Against the Bombers, he scored 96, but he scored 2 goals in the last 5 minutes. So again, sort of his score was a bit inflated. I think he's about an 85-90 player, but he's just sort of had a couple of extra big games. I know some people picked him at the start and he's done really well for them, but I'm kind of with you that I'd be taking Hearn personally just because I do expect Waters to break at some stage. What do you think about Lake before any of them if you didn't have him?
I haven't really been looking at him, to be honest, but what people have been mentioning to me is his price. At $420,000, he does hold value, assuming that people are seeing that 30 at the start was probably an aberration and that he's going to probably average somewhere close to 95, I think. Do you agree with that?
Yep.
Yep. So based on that, he's underpriced and is a pretty decent in. But I probably prefer Lake just for the fact that he's 40K cheaper than Hearn, and I'm not confident about any of the options. Sure. But
Lake does seem to be in ripping form. I've been really impressed with him the last few weeks. He's killing his opponent and getting plenty of the ball for himself. Do you think Grant Birchall is a good pickup this week?
Yeah, I think Grant Birchall's an excellent pickup any week. I think he's a bona fide top 7 defender this year. I think his low side is closer to 70, whereas other defenders' low sides look at, you know, when they score poorly, they can even score, like, put out 40s. But the Hawthorn lineup means that Birch sees a fair amount of the ball. He's a really good defender, reads the play really well, so good intercept marks. And we know he's always promised to be a good player. He was a good draft pick, so natural progression says that he should continue to do well. And he's really well priced. I think he's bottomed out at $474,000 for the second week running. And, you know, based on his current average, which is 95, he's well priced. But I'd assume that Birchall's going to average closer to even 105, which means that he's underpriced by at least 5 to 10 points. And to be able to have a bona fide D7 that's underpriced by that amount, I think, yeah, absolutely get on him.
Sure. If it wasn't for the buys, I would be bringing him in this week.
Anything else to talk about, Mark?
There's always more to talk about in Supercoach, mate, but I think we might leave it at that for this week. my trade in last week, Zaharakis, who just really got us home in the last quarter last week and is an absolutely brilliant kick. Can you tell I'm a little bit excited at the moment, mate? The Bombers have been a little bit down for a few years, so I'm just trying to enjoy it while I can.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been excellent to bring him in at 440,000. I'm always kicking myself because if I got him over Hawkins at that same point, jeez, what could have been, what could have been. Oh, well.
If I'd have traded in Stanton or even Watson instead of Murphy, I'd be like 400 points in front right now. I'm not kidding.
Yes, they have been killing it, the Bombers. All right, enough Bomber chat for now. Thanks again for joining us this week, guys, and best of luck for the upcoming round. Hopefully we've made your decision on that round 13 premium a little bit easier. I know a lot of people will be looking at that this week, and a lot more of us will be cheering for Dane Zorko after the weekend as well. So best of luck for the upcoming round, guys.
We'll be back with the Bomber Show next week. See ya.
See ya. Don't make me crazy. Don't